Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I also don't fly economy.
Well, no, part of the loyalty scheme is you get pretty good rates on business.
Yeah, you get bumped.
Yeah, yeah.
You get bumped, baby.
Mm.
Sorry, nice. Not bad. How was your flight back this morning? You just saying it was okay, was it?
Yeah, there were loads of noisy kids, but apart from that, it was good.
James, Andy's having better luck with you than you with the old flights.
Yeah, although, to be fair, BA were fine at the weekend. Thanks for that. Yeah. About time. You're getting your act together, maybe.
I don't know how you guys spend so much time away from your families. You're always travelling, always.
It's only brief, though.
Maybe we're simply obnoxious and they don't like having us at home.
Yeah.
Or the opposite. Chaps, PSG lost to Rennes last night, and this was set against a backdrop of what I thought was quite an interesting quote from Thomas Tuchel ring Neymar. You might better clear this up for me either way, but he said...
His man management, second to none.
Neymar has come back...
Oh, the hugs.
But Neymar's come back into the side, scored a couple of important goals, one of which was an overhead kick in the last minute for PSG. And Thomas Tuchel said this week, I can understand the fans are angry with Neymar, even permanently. So I think that's a strange thing to say. What do you think?
Is he projecting onto the fans how he feels about Neymar?
I can understand why any of us here would be really fucking angry with Neymar. And they lost the game. So what gives?
Well, I don't really take anything from that because medium term, we all know he's going still. They know he's going. He knows he's going. Presumably Barcelona know he's coming as well. So it's just a case of when. We all know it's a little holding pattern for the moment. And I find it quite refreshing that we're past the point where pretending that, you know, it's not like Patrick Vieira turned around in 2004 going, I never wanted to leave, is it? It's more realistic. And I quite like that. I don't think... really, we need to be concerned so much about Paris Saint-Germain fans and their annoyance with Neymar because, of course, he got plenty from the Lyon fans at the weekend. So they could take the weekend off. I mean, he had to stop taking corners at one point.
Hate on both sides.
Because they were throwing so many screwed up bits of paper at him that he just said, I can't work in these conditions.
Right.
Fair. And, Figo had a pig's head thrown at him, but you know.
Yeah, you shouldn't really be throwing things at players.
No.
No, you shouldn't. And of course.
Throw the occasional witty epithet. nothing more than that.
Yeah, true. And of course, he made him pay for it by scoring that fantastic late winner. But Rennes last night is an interesting one. If there could be an unshocking shock, maybe this is it because Rennes are perpetually underrated. Mm. They've got... had for a while now one of the best defences in the league. What I think is particularly amusing is the fact that they, very much like Mick McCarthy at Old Trafford back in the day, left Udon and Dia, their two best players, on the bench, think, oh, right, we'll save them for Dijon at the weekend and give them a thrashing.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, all that happened is they were winning anyway. They brought them on in the last 20 minutes. Dia scored a really fantastic tumbling bicycle kick, although there has been some question whether Alphonse Areola, of whom more later, would have saved it. Keylor Navas, who didn't have his greatest night, didn't.
Well, I saw that in the Keep this morning, and they were saying that maybe he's vulnerable to balls into in the air, crosses, because he's so used to Sergio Ramos just calling, mine!
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Not maybe he's vulnerable to bicycle kicks. And that'd PSG, be a strange one.
Aside from having, Thiago, they don't really have anyone who takes command in the box in terms of when it's like, that's my header.
Although you should never call mine, that. You should always put your name on it.
Yeah.
Otherwise it confuses your teammates.
That's true.
So Sergio Ramos,
and
you can call him mine.
And it's not allowed by the rules either.
Exactly. Imagine the career he could have had if he wasn't calling mine all the time.
Yeah. This is why footballers always talk about themselves in the third person.
Exactly.
Because they're just used to call, they're just used to shout, Sergio!
I even do that playing FIFA.
Yeah.
When the ball comes over and I'm about to header it, more! You've got to make sure, you've got to put a name on it. Is that fair criticism of Keylor Navas? Or is it just these sports newspapers as we see on the continent regularly just needing something to talk about?
I think...
It's 55 pages of daily news about a particular football club.
Well, yeah. I think as well, you run out of things to say about Paris Saint-Germain, don't you? Because the league feels like it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, what I think is interesting is the fact that with that slip-up, and they did look ever so flat, really, really flat. Even when Choupo-Moting had to come off at the end of the first half and Di Maria came on for him. That's right, Di Maria came on as substitute, even with their injuries at the moment. Mm. And, you know, we know Mbappe and Cavani are on the way back.
Icardi was injured as well, no?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's going to take a little bit longer. I think he's going to take another week and a half. But, you know, they still had a front three of Sarabia, Di Maria and Neymar. And yet they really didn't create much. Like I said, a lot of credit for that has to go to Reims and David Guillon, their coach, who's done an absolutely terrific job.
Sporting Guillon.
Yeah.
He certainly was at the end.
Is he sporting or is he unsporting? But what, when you say Reims are underrated, you actually tweeted Andy saying they're perennially underrated.
Andy's rating them though.
Yeah, well, not anymore. Not on this show. What do you think is realistic for them this season? And also, and that, a little little tip of the cap perhaps to Angers as well, who are second in the league.
Chapeau.
Yeah.
And chapeau to them. Yeah.
And bear in mind what's happened to Angers. Like, they lost their best player, Geoffrey Adelaide, to Lyon after the first game. And then they lost 6-0 to Lyon in the second game. Mm. And to come on from that and finish second, well, it says how other teams have been tripping over each other to give away points.
There, yeah. Yeah.
But you think when they lost Adelaide, they'd go down under.
Yeah. Don't look at me, Andy. I didn't tell him to tell that shit joke. Don't look at me. No, we didn't plan this before you turned up.
I have my doubts. Yeah. I have my doubts. I mean, Reims are different, of course, because
they've won in Paris and in Marseille now, right?
Yeah.
And Lille?
Just those two.
But in the last year, they've
yeah, and they beat Paris Saint-Germain at the end of last season as well, when Paris Saint-Germain were in bits and had no players left as well. But I think to win away in Marseille and Paris before we even get to October is pretty fantastic. I mean, Reims have obviously got a huge history as a club. They're very tied up with the formation in the first couple of years of the European Cup in the 50s. So having them back in the top flight is nice, but having them actually being competitive and tough is something else. I mean, you know, they won those games at Marseille and Paris without conceding a goal either. Mm. It's very, very impressive indeed. I think maybe top six. I think holding on to Unai is absolutely huge, because it looked like he would go for a long time this summer, and he didn't in the end. His move fell through. So that means something to them. But I mean, they could finish fifth and it not even be a European place. We've got to bear that in mind as well. So I think to say that they would get into Europe is a little bit
Well, remember premature. There's that third UEFA competition coming.
Yeah, the UEFA...
The Europa Conference.
Conference, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but of course there's going to be no French League Cup from next season to win to get in it, is there? They're abolishing the Coupe de la Ligue after this season. And, you know, there's been some discussion, hasn't there, all over Europe in recent days. Should everyone follow suit?
Well, yes, after Portsmouth's result in it this week, I was very happy with that.
That's the spirit.
But Ronce, do they have trouble scoring goals? One of the lowest scorers in the league so far. I think they only got 6 goals in 7 games. Is that going to come back to haunt them at some point this season? Going to catch up with them?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on Udogie and Diatta to provide the goals. But having said that, you know, they're a side with a certain budget. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, they're not going to go out and buy someone who scores 20 goals a season. It's simply not possible.
Everyone's got
to
muck in.
So it needs to be a team effort. I mean, you think Monaco have got a pile of goal scorers, and is it doing them any good?
It was this week.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I have to say, first win of the season at the end of September. I mean, admittedly against Nice, admittedly in the derby, and admittedly it's probably saved Leonardo Jardim's job for the moment, at least. But you look at the talent they've got on the books, you look at the money they've spent. I think L'Equipe described it as galactic prices for disastrous results before the game.
What is that in French? What is that in French? Does that sound more, is it roll off the tongue easier in French, that?
No, it's pretty much the same
thing. Okay, right.
But it just sounds better in French.
It's like, obviously. I mean, this is a digression, but I think the Sun newspaper yesterday or the day before around this Boris Johnson prorogation decision used a headline which was a pun on a comedian who hasn't been around, hasn't been on TV for 45 years.
Well, Jim Davidson.
Was it Jim Davidson? I don't think it was Jim Davidson. Yeah, he was probably involved in some capacity. But anyway, that's a digression. So Monaco are still in big trouble. We've seen a lot of chat about Zinedine Zidane going back to Real Madrid, and we'll come on to that a bit later, I'm sure. But is this just a shining example of why you should never go back?
Maybe. I mean, some would argue Jardim never went away, even when Thierry Henry...
Would Thierry Henry argue that?
Maybe. Even when Thierry Henry was there, he was still living just down the road, and, you know, they saw him around and about, and he was there to catch them when they fell out the window, basically. So, I mean, Jardim knew at the start of last season, didn't he? We talked about it on here at the time, that it was going to be difficult. Mm. And that was what really marked his card and eventually paved the way for Henry to pick it up, wasn't it? The fact that he'd said, well, this is going to be a tough old season, because he knew what was happening in terms of the club infrastructure. He knew, about Luis Campos going. He knew about the transfers, as everyone else did, the cumulative loss of talent. And that's the thing. It's not just about players going, and so many players going. It's about replacing them, and trying to replace a whole team is really, really tough. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of quality there, but, you know, does it all really gel together? I mean, there are promising little bits, and I think we have to say against Nice, who did have a couple of their best defenders out. Dante was missing, and I think Christophe Herrera as well. So that obviously helped Monaco. But I think the click between Slimani and Ben Yedder is very promising. Mm. Golovin had a very good game on the night, but he's been wildly inconsistent since he arrived. But there's so many moving parts around him. I don't really know whether you can blame him from that. There's been a lot of talk this season about Cesc Fabregas and have his legs completely gone. Well, they kind of circumvented that question by moving him forward to play just behind the front two. And that actually worked pretty well. And I think medium term, that's going to be the solution for him.
The thing with Monaco is that, yes, it's Jardim's second spell, but this is almost like his fourth or fifth job at Monaco. No, it's a team that wears the same colours, has the same badge, but wholesale change almost every summer, not just in the dressing room, but in the boardroom as well, as to who is doing the recruitment, who he's answering to. And I think when you base yourself on a kind of trading model, then you are hostage to how good your recruitment is. And I think it's very difficult to go through 5 or 6 players every summer, every window, and have consistency, repeat success, particularly on the expectations that they set in Well, the first couple of teams that he had, the one that reached the quarterfinal and then the one that reached the semifinal, two very different teams. One that was with Kondogbia in the middle, extremely good defensively, and the other with Mbappe up front, which was very good attacking. And I think in some respects, I'm not going to judge Jardim on what's happened over the last kind of 18 months. I just think it's very difficult to normalise this kind of instability that there is at Monaco. And, you know, there are very few clubs that are able to do that. And even, you know, the kind of models of them, the likes of Sevilla, for example, and I was going to say Udinese in the past. You look at Udinese now for different circumstances. Yeah, it's sometimes a case where teams that are run on this model are good for 3 years, and it takes maybe 5, 6, 7 years for them to put together another team and get it right again. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a complicated situation that I don't think reflects poorly on the manager. At least I hope, because I think he is deserving of a very big job, a traditional elite job at some stage.
Speaking of which, you know who's having a little sniff at the moment and was rather hoping that Monaco lost to Nice on Tuesday night? Sporting.
Oh, really? Interesting.
His old club. I mean, that would feel like a backward step, wasn't it? He's close with the president there, Federico Van Andersch. They still see it as the impossible dream, but who knows if he's got a little gap to fill between jobs.
Andy, Famalicão. A team that will not be familiar.
That's what I take when I get a cold.
Would not be. I try and put a pun in with familiar and Famalicão. Yeah. Pretend I did that because most people will be unfamilicão with them. I don't think anyone listening not anyone, because there's some absolute, people listening, some of them are
all of Portugal.
Some of them are absolute perverts. But Famalicão are not a household name, suffice to say. It's their first stint in the top flight, I believe, for 25 years.
Yes, it is.
And they sit top of the table in Liga Norsh, having beaten the aforementioned Sporting away from home last time out.
Yeah, and we'll mention a bit of the Sporting crisis in a minute.
Oh, is it a crisis? Is it again?
Oh, it's a proper crisis.
Great, excellent news.
Yeah. So even by their standards, Andy.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, this is the thing, James. It's brilliant. It's like home and away. There's never more of some ridiculous storyline. So give Famalicão their dues first.
Oh, yeah, that's much more important.
And then move into Sporting.
Yeah, let's. Famalicão is a really interesting story because they were bought in 2018 by Eden Ofer, Israeli businessman, energy magnate, whose family name people in London and art fans might be quite familiar with, because he's from a very rich industrialist family, and his dad, Sammy, heavily funded quite a lot of the Tate Modern. Mm-hmm. So you have an Offer gallery in there, I think, and various Offer halls and all the rest of it. Anyway, Eden, his son, is interesting because as well as being a very educated and a very successful businessman in his own right, he also owns over 30% of Atletico Madrid. And he got involved in Famalicão last year. Now, they've actually, in recent days, increased their shareholding in the club now to 85%. So,
put a lot of new players as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they're always going to have to.
18 or 19 new players.
Yeah, that's not really that unusual.
I'm rubbing my chin here, Andy. You say there's a link with Atletico Madrid, Portuguese side, signing lots of new players. What's going on?
Sounds a bit far-fetched, doesn't it?
What's going on?
Well, there is some British input as well. Josh Timon, he's out on loan there at the
that's
moment.
Right. Hull's very own, Josh.
Yeah,
he's representing.
Is he on loan from Hull?
He's on loan from Stoke.
Stoke, that's right.
That was perhaps my favourite bit, actually, James, just for a little aside of the Leeds United documentary.
Yeah.
You know, where the really fanatical dad is sat down with his two sons and he goes, ask me any big club, and I bet you I've been to see him. Ask me over a big club. And his son goes, Hull?
Good lad.
It's fantastic.
But Timon didn't get on off the bench against Sporting, though, did he?
No, he's had a mixed start to the season, actually. He's had a few difficulties with some of the trickier wingers. But it's interesting to see him out there, and I'm sure he'll have a good season because the confidence there is absolutely sky high at the moment. And they've been talking about this visit to Sporting, who is the first one of the biggies that they've played.
Yeah, because they had a very gentle start, fairly
well, they had to play up the road at Guimarães.
Yeah.
And I think when you know about Guimarães and the partisanness of it and the atmosphere and the fact they're a pretty good team as well under Ivo Vieira, it's a tough game, and that they got a draw out of that and that they felt that they could have won it. I mean, João Pedro Sousa, their coach, spoke afterwards about, okay, maybe we didn't deserve to win it, but we could have won it after Fabio Santos got their equaliser in that. Mm. I think that made them think, hang on, we're onto something here. And they've got points out of a lot of different situations this season. So, like...
Sebastian Coates.
Oh, my God. Listen, no, everyone's got points out of Sebastian Coates.
If we're talking about mixed starts of the season, let's just give our lovely listeners a quick reminder of the last three games Sebastian Coates has played for Sporting.
It's not a mixed start, though, is
okay,
it?
Okay, he's looking for a mixed start. That'd be an improvement
consistent,
for
consistently
yeah,
bad.
Yeah.
Own goal... Game where he conceded three penalties and got sent off.
Hat trick of centre backs
against Real Ave, that one.
And then
another own goal against Famalicão.
And then the own goal to win the game for Famalicão.
88th minute. Bruno, it's a good job because I don't think Bruno Fernandes played for Sporting that game, did he?
No, he didn't. He was suspended after being sent off against Boavista.
So he was lucky.
The previous week.
I think he would have probably down tools there and then.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of helped. For Famalicão as well, the fact that they were trying to find a post Bruno Fernandes solution, which at some point they're going to have to find anyway, aren't they? And they played a diamond midfield,
Mr. Wendell in there,
two up front, yes. Mm. And I think that left them a little bit open because Famalicão liked to counter attack. But like I was saying before, they've won in so many different ways so far this season. Like you think that they were. They beat Passos de Ferreira, they're 4-0 up and he eased up at the end. But they went a man down at Avs like after about half an hour.
Yeah.
And they still went on and
won
3-2 in that. Yeah. And then in the Sporting game, Sporting were better in the first half. But from the point that Famalicão equalised, like, there was only one winner. They were absolutely battering Sporting. And I know Coates had a difficult time, but you look, Coates and Mathieu, that's a pretty experienced,
very experienced
centre-back partnership, isn't it? And they absolutely could not get a handle on them. And the Famalicão players have been talking about this game for a few weeks now because it's the first biggie that they were going to play. And because their results have been telling them, you know what, I think we can actually win this. And that's been something that the players internally have been talking about for a while. Mm. Now, Fabio Santos, who's on loan from Braga and who was in the Porto Youth Academy when he was a kid, he started the season very well. Wide player, scored some goals, set some up as well. And he's, when you talk about them being quick on the counter-attack, he's got the sort of pace that really helps with that. I mean, he and his dad, who was a player himself, who came over from Brazil and he played for Porto in the 70s. He's one of those dads. He's one of those dads who's, my son's not getting enough games, and et cetera, et cetera. He needs to feel some love. And he has felt that love of Famalicão, and it's been great. And of course, they've got a couple of loans from Atletico as well. I suspect there will be more in the future. I mean, the expansion of their shareholding, I think, shows that, you know, people in the wider football world are beginning to think there's a project here worth investing in. There's a project here that could be sustainable. Mm. And there is an opportunity, I think, because, you know, we've talked about it time and time again, outside of Três Grandes of Porto, Sporting and Benfica, only 2 years in the history of the Portuguese league as a team outside that big three won it.
Belenenses and Boavista.
Oh, he's good.
We talked about this before.
He is good.
James and I tried to name him before you turned up, and I had Bernensch and you had Boavista. Yeah, I got confused. I thought it was Braga, but it's the other one
of the Bs. Killer Bs.
Braga were close in Jorge Jesus' first year, but it's incredibly difficult. So
Portuguese killer Bs.
For a team that's not one of those big three, or I suppose Braga, to be top, even if it's half a dozen games, is an incredible story.
Amazing. Finally, James, what month will they be relegated?
May.
Do you think it'll be May? They go all the way through to May. And yeah. Do you agree with that?
Do I agree with
Famalicão being relegated in May?
No.
You think they'll stay up?
No, they will stay up. I mean, they're talking about the whole time they've been going along, they've been talking about stocking up the points. But the way they won at Sporting, I realise Sporting are in a terrible spot. And God, I feel so sorry for the people who were doing like Vox Pops for like Sport TV. And
I think Vox Pops should be banned.
Well, I don't
everything.
Know. These were quite fun because you have this, when you watch them on Mais Football or Jogo or one of the Portuguese news sites, you just have this real feeling of claustrophobia as these reporters are being overrun by so many angry fans.
Yeah.
Sounds like fan TV, Sporting fan TV. Yeah. Where can I watch that?
The best ever. The best
Let's
ever
go and
football.
Make it this weekend.
Yeah. The best ever football Vox Pop was that Chelsea fan. Do you remember that? Chelsea, yeah. Chelsea, yeah. We're Chelsea, yeah. Were you going to say something about Sporting or Famalicão then, James?
Well, no, I mean, I thought they were like kind of plucky underdog story. We can all get behind this fairy tale. And instead,
Ian Holloway's Blackpool, something like that.
They're run by some Israeli energy super billionaire and Atletico Madrid are involved.
So you're out.
So I'm out.
Yeah,
okay. I'm out on Famalicão.
James,
I'm sorry.
Посмотрите. Ну это вообще лесо, игрок сборной команды Англии подрался. С игроком сборной команды Норвегии Берга.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Big debut in Italy last night.
Smaldini.
Smaldini pulled on the number 6 shirt for Roma in a 2-0 loss at home to Atalanta. James, you said to me earlier it was a bit of a reality check for Roma, but Smalling didn't do too badly. Is that fair?
No, he did pretty well. I mean, it was really interesting because Paolo Fonseca has, for the most part, played 4-2-3-1 since he's been at Roma. He's changed a few of the pieces depending on which opponent they're playing, but you could see there was a really clear strategy in this, and Smalling played a big part of it because I think what they intend to do is play one of those hybrid systems where you end up playing with three at the back. And he ended up starting left centre back in a back four, then moving to right centre back in a back four, and then playing centre back in a back three.
Mm. Well, he's missed a bit of football. They want to get him up to speed, right?
Exactly. I mean, a lot of things going on from a tactical point of view in this game. And I thought he actually did pretty well. And
how has he been welcomed, James? Because he's in some quarters of the football media here, he's perhaps a bit of a figure of fun, and people think he's perhaps not wasn't ever quite good enough to be a serious Manchester United player. But on the other hand, Roma fans can look and say, well, hang on, this is a guy who's played over 320 odd times for Manchester United. There was one season where he played, I think, almost every game. He's got a pedigree. Were they excited for him to come, or were they kind of a bit sceptical?
They looked at the pedigree in terms of, this is a guy who's played for many, many years at Manchester United. He's played for England. Mm. And it was welcomed as a very good signing, which, you know, I think to people in this country will come as a bit of a surprise. But shortly after joining, remember this was sort of late in the transfer window, he suffered a kind of, I think, muscle fatigue. They didn't want to risk him because they've got lots of games coming thick and fast, 7 in 21 days. And this was his debut. And I must say, it's a baptism of fire playing against Atalanta. I know people in this country, maybe the only time they've seen him this season will be on BT's goal show as they got absolutely hammered 4-0.
No, but this is a team who lit Terry up last season. They're top scorers in the division. They love to attack. It would have been a bit of an overload for a defensive unit against them, right? Even at home.
And I thought for an hour, Smalling and the other defenders around him, because it was actually Kolarov for a little bit playing left centre-back, as we'd seen him do under Pep Guardiola in his last season at Man City, and Fazio right centre-back. And he competed very well in the air when Kolarov got forward. He shuttled across, made sure he was there on the cover. He should have scored. I mean, he had a really good opportunity in the first half, free header on a corner kick. Mm. His header goes wide, just. But on the whole, yeah, if you look at the kind of player ratings in Gazzetta and the other sports papers in Italy today, he wasn't man of the match, but he was Roma's sort of most encouraging player.
Well, they terrorised a bit when Zapata came on. Because he got one, he almost scored another as well.
I wouldn't say terrorised.
He started the season again strongly, hasn't he, Zapata?
Oh, yeah. He's been brilliant. Yeah. I mean, again, that was a real surprise about the defeat to Zagreb, is that Zagreb actually, you know, kept that attack quiet and didn't concede against them.
James, just to interject, how did they hold on to him this summer?
I think the lure of Champions League football, and being a part of something for the last year where I think there was not fulfillment, there was a sense that they all wanted to experience this together. There's a great group at Atalanta. And I think also the ownership there, who over the last 3 years have gone into every summer transfer window and not broken up the team entirely, but, you know, made two or three big sales, really cashed in. They wanted to keep the front three and supplement it. So because that front three is, as Luke mentioned, top scorers last year, remarkable when you think, you know, Ronaldo's in the league and
just the other teams that are in there.
Some of the other striking talent around. And he wanted to, Gasperini kind of said, look, we've got players who can swap places with each other in defence and in midfield. We haven't got players who can swap places with our attacking players, aside from Luis Muriel, who they signed in the summer from Sevilla. And I just think this was maybe an opportunity as well where they probably took him aside and said, Duvan, you've just had your best ever season working under this manager. You're onto a good thing here. And if we put you in the Champions League shop window and you do really well in that, then, you know, you can get maybe more exposure, more attention for a last big move. Not just a big move to another top Serie A club, but a move to a big Spanish or Premier League club. And we can make more money from that as well. So that
it was curious this summer at Atalanta because with the exception of Gianluca Mancini, who went to Roma, they kept all of their best players, which, you know, is different from how they've been working the last few years.
Yeah, and they've started the season pretty strongly.
Best start to the season in a long time. 10 points after five games.
But going back to Smalling, do you think you've seen enough to see that he might settle quite well there, or is it too early to say?
No, I think there's going to be opportunity for him. A, because I think at the moment at least, they're serious about competing in the Europa League. Paolo Fonseca is. And I think if they want to play with a back three, then they have got he's going to get game time. I still think Gianluca Mancini, who they signed from $23 million from Atalanta, will probably be their starting centre back. But I think in that position. Mm. But he showed a lot of flexibility last night and an ability to kind of change roles in game and not let it phase him. And this is a guy who's, you know, I mean, he was given a lot of information, I think, a lot of instruction to take on board, and didn't seem to be a fish out of water. Seemed to got to grips with it quite quickly. So I think that was pretty encouraging. I always think it's fascinating seeing these players go to different leagues with slightly different styles, slightly different cultures, and see how they adapt there.
Any sort of tourist tips you can give him? What he should be doing on his day off in the beautiful historic city of Rome?
So many. Yeah. But Chris is a vegan.
Yes. And can you recommend a restaurant perhaps that he could go to?
No.
Difficult around there, is it? Yeah. I took Jonathan Green to a vegan restaurant in Islington the other week after Ramble Meats.
Yeah.
He said, first vegan pizza I ever had. It's bloody lovely.
Yeah.
He liked it. So
Ramble Meats as in M-E-E-T-S.
Exactly. An offshoot, an offshoot. But where would Chris be going on his sort of first couple of days off in terms of tourism? What would you recommend?
Well, I hope he's actually staying in the city rather than on the outskirts or outside, as a lot of the players do out there. You know, I would probably go to Trastevere and see a bit of old Rome, a bit of Testaccio, see where the actual club originated, Campo Testaccio. I'd really recommend, and this he'll have to keep this from the nutritionists and the fitness staff at Rome.
Would the nutritionists...
Fried food. Just go for the fried food, Chris.
But will they be supportive of being a vegan in Italy? Is that generally a sort of big thing?
Something
there?
They feel really strongly about.
Right. Tell us about that then.
Well, I mean, I've seen radio hosts who basically think this. They have their hot takes on veganism and and end up having like vegans protesting outside, and then they'll like stand. They'll open the window and like sort of just gesture with a big nice mortadella at them, sort of wave a salami at them,
the world's moved on, isn't it? I mean, it's not just about a country's culture, is it? It's about elite sport culture, and now elite sport culture is a lot more accepting of that, isn't it? You know, you look at all the NBA players that have climbed on the Beyond Meat bandwagon and all the rest of it.
That's right.
But while we're talking about Manchester United using Serie A as a great big rubbish bin. I was in Milan.
You just got back
night.
From Milan, haven't you? You flew back this morning, Andy, for this show. And you were into Lazio, 1-0 to Inter.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it. James and I were having an interesting chat actually about Romelu Lukaku, who is adored there already. We were saying, I'm not 100% sold on whether the style that Antonio Conte is asking him to embrace totally suits him.
No, at the moment, I think his players have still got to understand what service Lukaku likes most, because you can see he's not particularly at ease when they play the ball up to him in the air for him to kind of bring down.
Yeah.
Because I think Lukaku is someone who, in an ideal world, wants the ball to be played in front of him for him to run onto, and he's got the goal in front of him. I'm not entirely sold on him as a striker who likes to play with his back to goal.
Well, people look at the physical profile of him and all too readily assume that he's a back to goal, bring other players into play forward, and he isn't actually
people,
that.
People
really.
Have no. always assumed that about
Lukaku. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I mean, I do think he's being asked to perform a lot of similar work to what he had to at Manchester United. I understand, like, if Inter want to get the ball out, he is a useful conduit to hold the ball up, and that has to be part of his job. But that they have to find a way to play to his strengths more. But as you say, James, they are getting used to Conte a bit more, and there's nothing that's going to get the players on side more than winning games, is there? I mean, 5 out of 5, that's going to make people believe in what he does. And interestingly, I thought another point, the way he's breathed life back into Diego Godin, I think is really interesting, because Godin looked kind of as if he was heading towards being on his last legs in Spain last season.
Yeah, I think playing in a back three, which is something that he hasn't done before, and he's playing on the right side of it. He knows that, you know, if he makes a mistake, De Vrij can come on the cover. He's got a wing back in front of him, a very diligent one in the derby and in this game, Danilo D'Ambrosio, who essentially can play as a right centre back as well.
Yeah,
and
he scored the only goal of the game, we should point out.
Yes, yeah, sort of redeemed himself a little bit for missing from point blank range in the derby when he hit the post. It was easier to score than
I
not.
Saw that, yeah.
But he's someone who I think can cover for Godin. And I was at the derby at the weekend, and what was really impressive, you see just how streetwise Godin is, because Rafael Leao was playing on his side, and Leao is 6'2", so he's tall. You can play the ball up to him if you want, but he's built like a sprinter, and he's very quick on the counter attack. And there are a few times where he either spun Godin, beat him with a dribble, and I think he thought I've got the better of him, and Godin would always recover, which was surprising, because again you think of the recovery pace needed. But also, when Leao thought he was being fouled, Godin would come away with the free kick.
Right.
And I think that just shows just the experience, the nous that he's got. To be honest, I was a little bit... I know he suffered a muscle injury shortly after coming to Inter. And there was the Copa America as well, so he was late joining. But it looked like Conte already had his back three set, which was Skriniar, De Vrij, and D'Ambrosio. D'Ambrosio has been really good. But now it looks like, particularly for big games or games where their opponents have really good wingers, Godin will play right centre back, and D'Ambrosio will get the nod instead of Candreva as the right wing back.
Yeah. And being in the three as well gives Godin the chance to actually bring the ball out more than he did at Atletico. He gets to show a totally different side to his footballing personality.
Set up Sensi's goal in the win against Udinese, another 1-0. And also was involved in the build up to Lukaku's second goal in the derby win. Played it out to Barella. Barella crosses it into the box, and Lukaku did his best sort of Mark Haitley impression and nodded it in.
That's no bad thing.
Yeah. What kind of reference?
He wore the red of Milan, of course. What would you like to see Lukaku play up front with Martinez consistently then, rather than Politano? I know that Politano started last night, didn't
he? Yes, he did.
Is that because they played at the weekend and he wanted to rotate him around?
A bit, yeah.
You are a big fan of Martinez, as he makes his strike partners look better, whoever they are, essentially. Yeah.
But I like Politano as well. Politano, I thought, was Inter's best signing last season. And given some of the players that they brought in, I don't think many people expected that. He kind of played quite close to Lukaku first half, and then played out wide on the right touchline in the second half. And he's someone who is a good dribbler, can beat players, and you need that when you come up against teams that play with play deep, tight defences. He's someone who's got a good shot on him, can score from distance. So he's a good option that they've got, as is Alexis, who came on for the final 10 minutes. And we've seen Alexis do this in his brief cameo so far. Has been able to affect games. He should have scored on his debut. Musso, the Udinese goalkeeper, has been sensational this season. Pulled off a great save against him in the 1-0 win against Udinese. And then I thought last night, he won kind of quite dangerous free kicks, won corner kicks, helped Inter kind of hem Lazio in and see out a game which they kind of should have killed and never did. So I think there's more to come from Alexis too.
There's a lot of confidence around him at the moment. The vibe around him is totally different. Even though he's just had a little taste here and there of first team action, you think his first touch against Lazio, got the ball and wrong-footed their entire defence with the back heel. I mean, he got flattened for his trouble. But, you know, it doesn't feel like that's something he even would have tried towards the end of his Manchester United spell.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Lukaku, his brother was on the bench for Lazio, wasn't he?
He was.
Didn't get on, sadly. How long is it going to be before Juventus start getting a bit nervous about a really seasoned, well-respected, clearly very adept Antonio Conte flying with Inter? At what point are they going to start to think, oh God, this is going to be tough? Because obviously Juventus have got a new manager themselves.
Probably when they lose the Derby d'Italia in 10 days' time.
What do you think will happen?
I think that's going to be a really good acid test for both new managers, because I think it will be the first big test that both of them have. Mm. I think Conte and Inter are further along at this moment in time than Sarri and Juventus, just because, as Andy says, there's been complete buy-in at Inter, and you've already seen new recruits hit the ground running. And it's clear that all of Inter's players know exactly what they have to do. They know what options are available to them. And I think when you have all of those solutions in mind, it makes playing the game easier. You're not phased, even in big games. And I think Inter also getting lots of goals from all over the place. Lukaku's not played particularly well. He's got 3 and 5. The midfielders are scoring. Defenders are scoring. It's classic Conte, sharing the goals around. I think Juventus, we've seen them play the last two games, newly promoted sides, Hellas Verona and Brescia. They've gone behind early in both of them. They've come back and won, but it's clear that the defence, and I'm not just talking about the back line, but the team as a whole, when they don't have the ball, they need to be better. I think that will come with time. I think the issue is Conte gives you no time whatsoever, no margin for error. Mm. His team will go on a run, which they are at the moment. He's only the third Inter manager to start his Inter career with 5 straight wins in the league. And we're going to have to see what Sarri comes up with, I think, in that game in the Derby d'Italia, because you can imagine what the optics will be like if they lose that and he loses that game to an Inter side and club which has got Marotta at the top of it and Conte in charge.
So it'll feel like a lot more than just a standard issue defeat against a good team, won't it?
Yeah.
On the other hand, Juventus did manage to keep the Mario Balotelli juggernaut at bay this week, didn't they?
He was absolutely... I mean, Balotelli was a man on a mission in that game. Every single free kick.
Classic Balotelli.
To be fair, he almost scored
everywhere.
Yeah. But on the Juve thing, do you think Ronaldo will muster himself for the Derby d'Italia? Do you think he'll bother? Because, I mean, he didn't bother for the best awards. A lot's been read into that. He didn't feature at all in this win against Brescia. They played a slightly different system with Ramsey starting the game. What do you make of the Ronaldo situation at the moment, or am I reading too much into it?
Well, I mean, Sarri said that he had muscle fatigue after the...
So he couldn't go to an event. He couldn't go to the
win
awards.
Against Hellas. Well, I initially, when he didn't attend, I thought, they've got a match on Tuesday night. You know, his focus is on that. But then he wasn't in the squad. He was given a rest. Because they've got lots of games coming up. But, you know, it was quite interesting, actually, how Sarri reacted to Ronaldo not being in the team, because they played 4-3-3 for the most part, or kind of 4-4-2-ish over the last four games. In this one, they played 4-4-2 Diamond with Ramsey as a 10, Higuain and Dybala up front. And he said, you know, when we're not playing Ronaldo, what we have to kind of appreciate is that we've got loads of midfielders, partly because we couldn't shift some of them in yeah. the summer. So how do we try to... We have to come up with a way of getting these players involved as much as possible. And I suppose a diamond in midfield is one way of doing that. But it's also like Matuidi's been a really big player for Juventus in the first four games of the season. He's a big player for them, not only because he's very good, but because when you've got Ronaldo playing in front of him and Ronaldo does little or nothing when he doesn't have the ball and when his team doesn't have the ball, you need someone like Matuidi to cover ground, to recover, to help your team win the ball back.
He didn't start the game either.
So he didn't start the game either. Mm. And I think this is quite interesting in that without Ronaldo, you don't have to play Matuidi. You can then play maybe a more technical-based midfield, which helps you keep the ball, pass the ball better, mount and sustain pressure better. And again, it's a way of getting Dybala into the team as well. And I think Dybala was probably the Juventus' man of the match in both these games against Verona and Brescia. And Dybala haters will say they're against two newly promoted sides, blah, blah, blah. But I just think he makes them so much easier on the eye. He connects the dots better than some of their other centre forwards, although Higuain's link up play is really good. But part of me thinks that, I'm not going to say Ronaldo's holding Juventus back, but in some respects, Sarri has to play Ronaldo. You know, when you're paying someone 31 million, but I think a year, yeah, you have to basically build your team around that player. But
and they have to move to the timeline of someone who's going to be 34 very soon.
Part of me thinks that he keeps saying that so you're not going to see the football that I played at Napoli at Juventus because we've got different players. And they're more physical here. They're stronger. But there are personnel in that Juventus team where you think, oh, okay, if you play a 4-4-2 diamond with Ramsey, Rabiot, and Dybala, you've got your Brazilian fullbacks, and you've got De Ligt at the back, you've got Bonucci at the back. You can kind of do that.
He's 34 now, by the way. He's 35 in February.
Yeah,
Ronaldo.
Yeah, you're right.
But you guys have said in the past that Ronaldo, like these days, likes to taper his season so that he finishes strongly in the second half of the season. That was all very well and good last year when there was no realistic challenger to Serie A title, when there is one now. I mean, the other thing you guys haven't really mentioned is that Sarri might need him. He might be desperate for an X factor to try and win the league, because it's not going to look good for him if he comes into Juventus for the first time, his first big job in Italy, technically speaking, really. And it's the first time for a while they don't win the league. Well, so there's a lot of stuff to think about there.
They've only got 2 clean sheets in 5 games, which isn't disastrous by any means, because they've won 4 of those games. But they're vulnerable at set pieces, as we saw against Napoli, as we saw against Atletico Madrid. And they are taking a bit of time to kind of relearn how to defend, defend stepping up rather than backing off, defend zone rather than defend man. And, you look at Conte's Inter at this moment in time, they've only conceded 1 goal so far. They don't give up many chances. And they should be taking more of their chances up front as well. They should be scoring more. Ebue ceza sahasında. Ebue out.
You looking forward to the Madrid derby?
Very much so. And Atletico got something to prove in this, because it's been a while since they've won in the Madrid derby.
Real Madrid now top of the table. That looked weird to see that when they beat Osasuna. You look at them and you go, right, now they're top of La Liga. And all the chat about them has been what is going on with them. And yet they're top.
Well, we talked about returning coaches and big results with Leonardo Jardim. I think you can argue that Real Madrid's win at Sevilla last Sunday night is even bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave a good, solid performance. Deserved to win 1-0.
But Lopetegui slept very badly that night.
Yeah. Benzema coming up big for Zidane, as he has on so many occasions before. And they looked like a team. They were so disjointed in Paris, 4 days before. And this was completely the other side of a coin. They looked well-drilled. They looked organised. They looked tough to break down. Of course, they've since gone on then to win in the week against Osasuna, which you would expect. And of course, we saw that fantastic goal from Rodrigo, and what an incredible first contribution that was from him after Vinicius Junior scored in the first half.
You like him, don't you, James?
Yeah, I think he's... I like players who aren't afraid to take others on. And I think this game, again, was an example of that, where he was just, being told to make the most of one of his key strengths, which is speed and being able to go past players and just go for it.
Encouraging for Real Madrid as well, because they changed it quite a lot between the Sevilla game and the Osasuna game.
Yeah.
Played a different way. And different players.
Everyone has had to this week, because, it's intense, especially for the teams that are...
Osasuna weren't up too much though, were they?
No, but, they're going to be fighting against relegation for much of this season. They're brave, you can say, but that's it. Real Madrid have made heavy weather of beating average teams this season. So they looked a little bit more comfortable in this. Jovic was unlucky not to get his goal. He had one ruled out for one of those toenail offsides, I believe that's what we call them now, isn't it?
Oh, well, we'll be talking about frame rates in a minute and HD cameras and all the rest of it.
Oh, I'm having none of that.
Can't agree. can't get into that. That's Jonathan Wilson's thing. Next time we'll ask him on the Blizzard to do something about that.
But I think it all goes back, and it feeds in really nicely, to one of Zinedine Zidane's pledges from the end of last season, where he said, don't worry about the Champions League. What we need to be doing this season is, this season coming, in other words, this season, 19-20, is winning La Liga because we haven't won it enough in the last decade and it's not good enough. Mm. And now you look at what's happened with Barcelona and the fact that they can't put one foot in front of the other on the road at the moment. And of course, they're beaten at Granada, a promoted side last weekend, although Granada have done well. That's still a terrible result for Barcelona.
Yeah.
And everything feels a little bit more settled at Real Madrid. I do wonder if he were to go on and win the league, whether an early Champions League elimination is something they could live with.
Oh, come on, Andy. It's Real Madrid.
I know. It's
Real Madrid.
It's hard to say. It's all about the manner, though, isn't it? And we talked about this so many times. It's in the manner that you go out of the Champions League. It's not necessarily where you go out, as long as it's in the knockouts.
It just makes me laugh because, you know, when it suits the situation, oh, this is a team that defines themselves for the Champions League. That's what they say. And now all of a sudden it's fine to go out of the Champions League because they want to win the league.
No, that's
supposed to be a big club.
That's not what they're saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying maybe...
So secretly they think it won't be the end of the world.
I'm saying maybe they can tolerate it. Maybe, well, they know they're not good enough to win the Champions League. I mean, see what they did in Paris last week.
I mean, they weren't for what? Three of their four Champions Leagues.
But they did it anyway.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting seeing them this weekend because Atletico...
You can't realistically say that they'd be all right to go out in the group stage here. I mean, the group stage...
No. But that would be... Look at the other teams that were in the group. That would be not impossible, but that would be a real shambles if they were going to do that.
Galatasaray and Bruges, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, I'm not having happening. That. It's not happening.
That would be an absolute stinker.
But I think when you look ahead to the Madrid derby this weekend, Atletico have got a lot to prove in this because people are looking at the 7-3 result in pre-season. And it was a friendly. The fact is, if you go back in the last...
It's one of the best friendlies I've ever seen, by the way.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I think it's... In the league, it's something like 3 years since Atletico have beaten Real Madrid. Mm. And we think of them as, you know, the chief irritant for Zidane and Real Madrid. And it's plainly not been the case in recent seasons. There have been a lot of dull draws in that. But it's funny, in that period... And certainly in latter period of the first spell of Zidane, there's a lot of Atletico-type football played by Real Madrid, which I think is, in one way, is the ultimate compliment to them. But it must be quite frustrating for Simeone to see your blueprint copied and then it to be used to do a number on you. It's unfortunate. Interestingly, going back to that friendly as well, the word is that Diego Simeone had this idea, well, okay, I'm going to, just to get under their skin, I'm going to do what we did in that friendly and play with Diego Costa, João Félix, and Alvaro Morata.
Can't now, can I?
That is no longer possible because Morata, who was being specifically saved for the derby at the weekend, came on at Mallorca, they're winning 2-0, picks up two bookings in under a minute, for gobbing off and starting on Salva Sevilla, and you don't start on Salva Sevilla. Come on, he's an institution. Mm. And now they're stuck and they're left without him. Now, of course, Diego Costa and João Félix both scored in Mallorca. It's the first goal that Diego Costa's got in a very long time, it feels like. Mm. But still... It's really annoying for Simeone that, because he had something particular to upset Real Madrid. And, you know, especially after they gave such a fantastic performance on the road, and they never win at Nervión. They always have big problems there. And they gave such a good performance, Real Madrid, to win that game. And it's amazing how it can all turn around in just a couple of days.
It'll be an exciting game. Saturday night, 8 o'clock. Definitely one.
Or it'll be a boring draw, according to recent history.
If you're not watching Football Ramble live at Alexandra Palace at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, which you bloody well should be, get your tickets now, ramblelive.com. Watch the Madrid derby. In fact, do you know what? I might come on stage and just stick it on the big screen. So there we go. Watch that for a couple of hours. Nice.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.